The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Hello, Pennsylvania and Delaware and New Jersey and Maryland. I get calls from all over the place. Thank you guys for listening in. You are listening to Kathy Barnett. I am filling in for my double good girlfriend. I know a friend of yours as well, Dawn Stensland, on the Dawn Stensland Show. We have a lot going on today. Hopefully we get a vote. I know that that is up and coming. I have Trish Regan is calling in. I have Brandon Straka, John McLaughlin, Trump's poster, Joe from Texas, and others. This is going to be a really fun, packed day. But to start, I have a good friend of mine. I love it when I see her on all over the place. I mean, you're everywhere, Batya. Batya Unger Sargon. How are you, my friend?
Hello, my friend. I'm doing great, thank God. How are you doing?
I am doing well. I love the reason logic that you bring. And it's so simple, but some of the best things in life are just simple. It's common sense. And I appreciate it. I always click when I see you talking somewhere. Now, I know you've done some shifts in your career. Tell us what you're up to real quick.
So I am currently a columnist at the Free Press. I'm a contributor at Newsmax. I am finishing up my third book. And, yeah, just doing a lot of media, trying to influence the conversation for good in a way that reflects, what I consider to be God's will in this country, and trying to just make things better for the average American.
Yes. Now, you and I are going to have some tension on some things, but I think tension is good. I think we live in a culture that has been real softened up, where we avoid all forms of tension, and we just want to agree, everybody to be happy, happy, happy. And so the tension part is where we land on this big, beautiful bill. What are your overall thoughts? What's in, what's out? What are you thinking?
So I am having a lot of trouble with it. I think that in many ways it really undermines the president's unbelievably righteous America First agenda. And so I'm really struggling with that part of it. It seems to me to be asking the least of us to make the biggest sacrifices and asking much less of people who have much more. And I think that, to me, that is very, it's against the Torah, it's against the Bible, but I mean, it's not just that it's immoral, it's also that it is really bad politics. And I can go into specifics about what I'm referring to, but I imagine you don't agree with my characterization of the big, beautiful bill.
No, you know what? Listen, I agree with you that it is not perfect. Very little is perfect. And yet I come to this moment realizing that something is going to pass, right? Something's going to get passed. And the conversation we don't have in this country is a conversation about the middle class. No one really talks about the middle class. We're always talking about the top 1% or the bottom 50%, the poor people. And no one talks about the people who are really driving the engine for both segments, right? Because the top 1% has become the top 1% because of our, the middle class, productivity. We have given them the productivity and our wages have remained stagnant for the most part. And then the bottom 50%, I mean, I certainly lived in the bottom 50%. You know my story better than most. So the bottom 50%, it's my taxes that are primarily paying for them. And no one talks about the middle. And the middle 100%. Is under a tremendous amount of squeeze right now. And I fear we are becoming a nation of rulers and renters and nothing in the middle. And we see those examples all around the world, and it doesn't bode well for that bottom 50%.
I could not agree with you more. I think that you're so right. The left has a view of the economy and the electorate as being like the billionaires that they hate in the top 1%. And then like they see everybody else as poor and want to give them endless welfare. And then they are sort of sitting pretty in the top 10%, you know, the mm-hmm. professional managerial class, mm-hmm. people who have multiple degrees. And from the top 10%, they rail against the 1%. You know, it's so funny to me because yes. it's sort of like these are the people who can afford to fly first class.
Yes.
And they have endless class resentment against people who have private jets.
Yes.
And it's just so funny because I think poor people and working class people and middle class people actually admire billionaires. They see them as jobs creators. They don't yes. have that resentment against them. They resent that top 10% who now control over 60% of the GDP. So most of the wealth is not actually with the billionaires. It's with that professional leftist class who are ironically the ones espousing socialism. So that's kind of the problem with the left. But I think on the right, the problem is, you know, you have this president, President Trump, who did an amazing, amazing job of making working class and middle class Americans feel seen and heard, and not just feel that way. His economic agenda, the tariffs and the immigration hawkishness, result in real wage growth for working and middle class people. And that's what bothers me about this bill is it really seems to me to be anathema to those goals, specifically a few things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they keep talking about the tax cuts and enshrining the tax cuts. I am all for tax cuts mm-hmm. on working class and middle class people. What I'm not for is tax cuts on millionaires and billionaires, keeping them at a 37% tax rate instead of going up to 39%, they will not feel that difference, Kathy. We don't know that because we're middle-class people, but billionaires, millionaires, you raise their taxes from 37% to 39%. They will not ever notice that. And yet that money could go toward paying off the deficit, and it has 80% approval from the American people, 80% approval for raising taxes on the rich. And it's just, it would be a bonanza. Can you imagine, Kathy, forcing every Democrat to vote against raising taxes on the wealthy? Like, they will have nothing left. And meanwhile, instead of doing that, they do this, they're lying to us. They're saying, well, you know, if we don't pass this, the average American will see a tax increase. There's nothing in like the law that says, well, you have to, in order to keep taxes low on the middle class, you have to keep them low for the wealthy. That's ridiculous. And instead, where are they looking to cut? They're looking to take away Medicaid from able-bodied people who are on Medicaid who are not working. Now, in theory, I, of course, support work requirements for Medicaid. I totally support that in theory, in principle, mm-hmm. sure. But what's actually going to end up happening, we know. These people will not get on, they will not get a job. They will not volunteer for 20 hours. What's going to end up happening is they're going to lose their Medicaid, and their families who are already broke are going to end up paying their medical bills because, of course, medical bills are not, it's not something you can choose not to do. It's not like, you know, spinning rims. And that's how Republicans talk about it. They talk about these people who are maybe even defrauding the Medicaid system as if they're like stealing cash. They're not. More people should have access to better health care. A government should care that its hardest working citizens have great health care. And instead, most hardworking working class people have terrible health care.
Yeah.
And Medicaid is actually really good health care. So to me, like, sure, maybe like, you know, in an ideal world, we should be saying, look, you want access to this? Volunteer for 20 hours a week. But the idea that those 20 hours of volunteer are going to pay off the deficit is ridiculous. So to me, they're really kind of going after the wrong place here and the wrong thing here. And it is so, and I'll just say one more thing.
Uh-huh.
So I traveled around the country interviewing working class people for my book, Second Class. I interviewed hundreds of people.
Which is an amazing book, Bhatia. You did
thank you,
so
honey.
Well.
Thank you.
Yes, I love that book.
And what I found was very little distinguished working class Democrats from working class Republicans. The Democrats wanted a total moratorium on immigration, which the Republicans are great on. And the Democrats and the Republicans, so the Democrats wanted the thing the Republicans are good at. The Republicans wanted much more access to good, affordable health care. Like the first party to get to that combination of like, let's just have no immigration for 10 years and let's expand access to health care is going to have a ruling majority for 50 years. And instead, what we have right now is one party that wants to give Medicaid to millions of illegal immigrants and another party that wants to kick millions of American citizens off of their health care. And it's just so sad because 80% of Americans are in the middle there. And I just wish that the GOP would become the party of the working class. And looking at this bill and seeing so much energy to keep giving these tax cuts to the wealthy, like, I just feel despondent, Kathy.
Yeah. Again, I agree with you. This bill is not perfect. And yet, I believe a bill is going to pass. And if a bill is going to pass, which it is, my focus has been on how can we get the most for those in the middle, those who are not only providing the production for the top 10%, but also the money that pays for the 35 million out of the 70 million who are able-bodied and not working. Now, I know you're Jewish. I'm a Christian. In the Bible, Jesus says the poor will be with you always. But you know where he doesn't make a promise? For the middle class. It is not guaranteed that the middle class is going to be with us. So poor people, you're always going to have poor people, right? And I grew up underneath a rock. I grew up in a home with no insulation, no running water, outhouse in the back, well on this side. When I say poor, Bathya, we couldn't even afford the middle O. We were just po. But what got me out of that wasn't a reliance on someone to give me something. That probably would have been nice. But what motivated me was that poverty sucks and I don't want it. Poverty is hard. I didn't want it. And what was available, because what I'm seeing as a person in the middle class is there's a shrinkage of opportunities. It's beginning to get real tough to be able to even live your life in the best possible way you know how and still be able to do the basics for your family and for yourself and put something to the side. The poor is always going to be there. You're always going to have poor people. I mean, I didn't get health insurance until I was out of college and working my first job. And that's when I and my health care was, please, Lord Jesus, don't let me get hurt. That's not the best way to do it, but I felt an urgency. Everyone doesn't feel that, and I don't think it's my responsibility to cover for them. I think our responsibility, you know, from life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, happiness meaning you live the best version of your life, is that we create an economy where there are opportunities, where the taxes are low, where the restrictions are low. And if you want to build a life for yourself, you have the ability, like I did, to build my life. I was speaking with Dr. Ben Carson once, because he grew up in dire poverty. Just he's city poor. I was country poor. We came to understand. But poor, right? Nonetheless. And I asked him the question. I said, do you think if we were in our situation that we grew up in today, would we be able to claw our way out of that poverty? And we both came to the conclusion it would be even harder today for us to be able to climb out of dire poverty and build a life for ourselves. And today you got money flying everywhere. I mean, just money raining down on people. And yet it will be harder today because the opportunities I can feel the opportunities are rescinding. And we are becoming a nation of rulers and renters, and the squeeze is real. And so when I look at this big, beautiful bill, there are some positives. It's not perfect. Maybe we'll get it right the next time, right? Because there are going to be like three or four more opportunities to have a bite at this apple. Maybe we get it right as we, you know, get what we can get today and then keep moving forward.
I could not agree with you more about the opportunity. I think it's horrible. And I agree with you about so much here. To me, healthcare is just one of those things that our country is so unhealthy. And I think that what we have is a lot of people who are striving, who are working really hard, and still don't have access to good health care. And what happens there is, A, we have no preventative care, which is terrible, because that is one of the best ways to keep people healthy. But also what ends up happening is very poor people, broke people, working class people who make just too much to qualify for Medicaid, but still have like really terrible health care from their work, end up in the hospital anyway, instead of going to the doctor for preventative stuff. Yeah. Things get much worse. They can't afford it, and they declare bankruptcy, so their lives are ruined, and the taxpayer pays for it anyway, except they pay for it in a much more expensive way, because that is the most expensive option because of the hospital cartels. So to me, this is not like a luxury. It's not even like food stamps. It's, you know, we want people in workforce. We want them to be healthy. And what we end up having is very rich people who are very healthy, and the hardest working people whose bodies are just breaking down, even though they work with their bodies for a living. Like, we as a society owe something to people who put in the back-breaking labor into these jobs. So maybe it's that we say to corporations that have more than $1 billion in profits, sorry, you can't give these like basement bargain health insurances to the hardest working Americans. You know, some guy who sits in a truck for 12 hours a day, you know, like you cannot pay somebody $50,000 a year to do that and not give them health care. Because we rely on that person's body, which is breaking under the burden of this labor that the rest of us who get to live healthy lives need him to be doing. It's just unfair. And again, you're so right. It's not about the poor, because the poor are on Medicaid. They're getting, you know, they call Medicaid the Cadillac of health cares. There are people, I interviewed women who would love to become full-time workers, who work part-time. But they can't do it, because if they go to that full-time work, they'll lose their Medicaid and their child has a disability. And they don't even know ahead of time if they go to the full-time job, if they will have their child services covered, right? It would be immoral for that mother to take that full-time job. She has to put her child first. So the whole system is set up in a way that I think really penalizes exactly the people you're talking about, the middle class and the working class, because both sides are on the side, either, you know, Democrats are on the side of the poor and the Republicans on the side of the rich. And we just really, I just think, you know, this is the energy. What I'm saying, I feel that this is the energy I saw in President Trump. This is why he's the first politician I've ever endorsed in my entire life. And let me tell you, Kathy, as somebody who's like from the left, you know, that wasn't without cost.
I know.
and I'm so proud to have done it. You know, I'm so proud to have done it. But I looking at this bill, I think it's exactly the old version of the GOP that the president came to replace.
Yeah. Batya, I know I only asked you to be on for a couple of minutes this morning. Do you have time to hold on so we can talk about Mom Donnie?
Yes, sure.
Okay, great. We're going to take a break. Guys, Sharon, I think it was Sharon who had called in. I'm so sorry, Sharon. Call me back and I will answer your call right at the top of the hour. The number is 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. Call me back, Sharon. Hello, everyone. We are back. I'm your girl, Kathy Barnett, sitting in for Don Stensland on the Don Stensland Show. Mango Mush, I am looking at you over here on YouTube. That is crazy. Your mom. Mom had her hip replaced here in America. It cost $398,000. She could have had the same surgery in India for $7,800. Same doctor.
Wow.
Yes, our medical system is money driven. Money, 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 money driven. I am back with my friend Batya Unger Sargon. Batya, how can people follow you?
I am on Twitter, but I don't recommend people spend time there.
I know.
I'm also on Instagram. It's a more fun platform for me. Are you on Instagram, Kathy?
I am on Instagram, but I have done like 3 months purges on all of my social media for the most part. I go out just to post something and then I run off real quick.
It's
just a dark place. It's just, you know, it's like an echo chamber, and it's
totally
just the same old muddy water and muddy thinking. And I try to bring in new people so I can change up my algorithms. It just doesn't seem to be working. I still get the same old, and I'm a conservative, and I have a lot of conservative voices, and it's just very plastic, and it doesn't. I think the Republican Party is missing out on opportunities to speak to real people in a way that resonates with us.
Yeah, totally agree with you.
So let me switch real quick to Zohran Mamdani. Did I get that right this time, Dan?
Yes.
I know. Okay, he wants to freeze the rent in New York City. He wants city-run grocery stores, $70 billion of debt to fund affordable housing. He wants free buses. He wants to give gift baskets to all newborns, no cost for child care. And it just goes on and on and on. None of it is going to really happen. But probably what's most concerning for a lot of people, and I would imagine Jewish people, that he absolutely refused to condemn global intifada. And he kind of make it out to be civil unrest. But intifada is much more than just civil disobedience, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the first and second intifadas in Israel, the first one was in the 90s and the second one was in the early 2000s. And they both left, you know, the second one left 1,000 civilians dead, Israeli civilians. The first one, it was less than that, but there was definitely terrorism affiliated with it. You know, it's sort of a sad fact that Palestinians don't know how to resist Israel except by attacking civilians. Every single instance of Palestinian resistance has been targeted against Israeli Jewish civilians. So when you say globalize the intifada, what you're really talking about is what happened in Washington a month ago, where two young people were murdered for being Jews outside of the Jewish museum. Actually, one of them was Christian.
That is global intifada.
Exactly. So when you say, like, oh, you know, Zohran Mamdani says, this is not the language I would use, but you know, free speech and so forth, and this is about human rights. It's not. He is pandering to his base, which is a combination of, you know, Southeast Asian Muslims and upper middle class, wealthy, over-credentialed Columbia and Harvard graduates living in gentrified Queens. I mean, that's who he represents, and that's who he represents with his social policy. This is trust fund socialism. Let's just give free stuff to people who have, like, you know, every opportunity. And it's, you know, globalize the intifada. It's he has said that, you know, the Palestinian cause is basically the be all and end all for him. It is at the root of all of his politics and the root of all of his political organizing. What's sad, Kathy, is that many, many Jews voted for him. About a fifth of Jewish New Yorkers voted for him. In many ways, our community is very lost. We did see the largest shift towards Donald Trump.
Yes.
He's brand new from Jewish Americans. He won about 35% of Jewish Americans,
which is huge
for a community that's overrepresented, very attached to the Democratic Party, which is what my third book is going to be about, why Jews are Democrats and why the left turned on the Jews. So there is a real shift happening, but unfortunately, many Jews, especially those who are, they call themselves Jews of no religion. So they're sort of ethnically Jewish. And what that means to them, especially if they have these fancy educations, is basically like, you know, it's a claim to oppression. They feel very, you know, they're very much on the left. And it's sad for us.
Yeah. You know, my neighbor is a Jew and Democrat. But, you know, I mean, I like her. I have the best neighbors ever. And right before Donald Trump and right before the election, I went to her house for something and she said, Kathy, I just can't do it. I cannot vote for Kamala Harris. And she said, I think I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. And she said it in a hushed tone in her home. But, you know, so I saw the shift myself. But, you know, now you as a Jew cannot claim, a market on a voting bloc that votes overwhelmingly against their own interests, because as Black people, I think we have that market cornered as well. However, However, this time, and I said it the last couple of days, black people actually made me proud because they did not vote for Mondani. They voted for Cuomo, which is another conversation, but they didn't vote for the communist radical Muslim. And I'm proud of black people for that.
Yes, black people single-handedly trying to save New York, you know, it's so great. They did it last time in the mayoral race. And, you know, you see this a lot in Democratic politics that, you know, rich white people are really seduced by this trust fund socialism. And black people again and again are like, what is this nonsense? No, we don't want revolution. We just want better jobs. Can we get a better job?
Exactly. Bhaktia, thank you so much for coming on. Have a blessed day.
God bless you, Kathy. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Hello, Pennsylvania. You are listening to Kathy Barnett. I am sitting in for the great, she's so sweet and kind, Dawn Stensland on the Dawn Stensland Show. Sitting in for her, you're listening to the number one talk radio station in Philadelphia, covering most of the mid-Atlantic states. Did you know that? Did you know that, Dan, that this is the number one talk radio station?
Ooh, look at that.
I know, right? We're special.
Hey, I like that.
I know. It's always good being number one because two is not a winner and three nobody remembers. Who said that? Nelly? Anyway, I have my niece and nephew in studio with me right now, Albie and Belle Bear. Just love them so much and they're sitting in. They don't want to come on radio, so I'm not going to force. I know.
The microphone's on if they want to. You know.
The microphone's on. No, just, somebody's bold. Bella's just looking at me, but move on.
You're getting side-eyed.
I am getting side-eyed by a 12-year-old. But nonetheless, I am so excited to be here with all of you. Give me a call at 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. Let's talk about it. I am waiting for Brandon Straka to call. In. Hopefully he will. If he does, we'll get him right on. Anyway, I want to move straight to, I have started, Dan, on my weekend show on Saturdays from 10 to 11. You can listen to me, Kathy Barnett, on the Kathy Barnett Show here from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time.
Great show.
I'm sorry.
I'm just saying it's a great show.
Yeah, I think it is. Like last week we got like six callers. Fantastic. And on a Saturday at 10 a.m., people are calling like every Saturday. I'm getting like a ton of phone calls and I just love it for a 1 hour show. Very exciting. But I've started this thing called Nut of the Week because, you know, it's like coming down from heavy talk, heavy lifting, to the ridiculous and the cultural rot. And we have a lot of people who are just nuts out here. They're behaving very poorly, unconstitutional, and sometimes you just got to put a big, bright, beautiful spotlight on them. So let's start with my, and usually I try to come up with just one nut of the week. As you can imagine, it's not a hard thing to do. However, I'm always running a close competition. There's always one or there are always more than one. And it's a close competition, and I just want to put a big, bright spotlight on them. Go ahead, Dan, play it.
You know, I do think that several members of Congress in some of my discussions have brought up media literacy because that is a part of what happened here. And we're going to have to figure out how we rein in our media environment so that you can't just spew disinformation and misinformation. It's one thing to have differing opinions, but it's another thing entirely to just say things that are false.
Wow. Like maybe false, like Biden has never been healthier in his life. Or what about false, like, you know, Biden was outrunning me the other day. It was hard for me. And I'm 32 years old to keep up with him. You mean false like that? Is that what she's talking about, Dan? False like that?
Just, right. It's classic after all this time, these past couple of years, and the dance around Biden with the Jake Tapper book coming out now. And Jake Tapper himself, who was one of the worst culprits of this, now trying to dance around the fact that they lied to us, and AOC is now trying to turn it back on the head. Come on.
All of a sudden, she wants to reign in the media. Here we have Joseph said she's the biggest violator. Of course, these people are so rich, right? And then did you hear that pregnant pause? We're just going to have to. No, we don't. What we need is for you to sit down, shut up, and stop. Remember when they tried to... Okay, let's go to the next nut of the week before I say this.
I also think there are Americans who are engaged in this kind of propaganda. And whether they should be civilly or even in some cases criminally charged is something that would be a better deterrence because...
Okay, so now Hillary Clinton, this is her on late night TV just a week ago. Now she is saying, hey, not only do we need to rein in, AOC says, not only do we need to rein in media. And of course, they're not talking about CNN, MSNBC and all of their because those entities, those media outlets are extensions of the Democrat Party. But what she's talking about is this new media, these podcasters, the Tim Pools, the Charlie Kirk, the Benny Johnsons, and all of this new media that is moving the needle, the Sean Farish. We're moving the needle as conservatives, as our listeners, as many in America are moving away from mainstream media, and they're finding these podcasters like myself and others. So they want to, so AOC says we need to rein in the media. Well, Hillary doing what only Hillary can do, and that is to up the ante and say, not only do we need to rein these people in, but maybe we need to civilly and federally charge them with a crime. That sounds like a thought crime. Like if you have a thought and if you dare to express that thought, that's a crime. And maybe we need to look at doing that. How many of you can remember Russia? Russia did it. Remember that we've now have hopefully all come to the conclusion that was a lie. That was a CIA operation. Remember when they told us that 2020 election was the most secure election in American history? Well, now I'm looking at the newspaper and the headline is FBI scrutinizes handling of alleged CCP, Communist China Party election interference, saying that China sent in tens of thousands, they say, of fraudulent U.S. driver licenses for the express purpose of getting it into the hands of Chinese students, other illegals, so that they can secure a mail-in ballot and influence our election. So, hey, it wasn't. 2020 wasn't apparently the most secure election we've ever had. But that, according to them, not only do they want to rein that in, according to AOC and Hillary, but these two nut of the week would have found a way to criminally charge people like myself for speaking truth, saying the very things that now has come to pass. Like, for example, misinformation, disinformation. According to them, a boy can be a girl. Now we are realizing, according to them, it's perfectly okay for the LGBTQ, I call them the alphabet mafia, LGBTQAI plus and everything else, to be taught to our five-year-old. Well, now the Supreme Court has come and said, no, if parents want to opt their children out of this, these are not special characteristics. It is not the equivalent of being black. I know I have a tape of this. I'm going to save this for when Trish Regan comes on, of Ketanji Brown Jackson equating being black to being transgender. No, the Supreme Court just came back last week and said, no, being transgender is not a special characteristic. But according to AOC and Hillary Clinton, this would be something that maybe would meet their test of me being criminally charged just 2 years ago. Now everyone seems to be waking up. As I've always said, I have learned over these past 4 years that I can trust myself because I was right about everything. And when I say that, my family roll their eyes. But you know what? I was right about everything. I was right about the 2020 election. I was right about boys cannot be girls. I was right about boys should not compete with girls because it's inherently false. I was right to homeschool our kid. I was right. I was right the whole time. And now it feels so good. It feels so good to actually see others finally coming out of whatever stupor they were in for these past 4 years. All of a sudden, it's like we lost our mind and they're coming around to it. But yeah, that's what I've learned. I've learned that I could trust myself and God forbid the next COVID-19 and they want to shut everything down. I will know because I didn't shut down. I continue to live my life. I'm perfectly healthy. My children are perfectly healthy. Why should we shut down? No, if you're sick, you need to shut down. If you are morbidly obese, you need to shut down. You need to sit down in a basement and just sit there until it's all clear. But for the rest of us, we should be sending our kids to school. And especially if you can keep a liquor store open, surely you can keep the church open. If you can keep a stripper club open, surely you should be able to keep the schools open, right? I mean, surely. But somehow we lost our mind. It's good to see reality is coming back. But you have these two nut of the weeks, AOC and Hillary Clinton, first prize winners, who believe differently. Here's the number, 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. You're listening to Kathy Barnett on the number one talk radio station in Philadelphia, 1210 WPHT. I am sitting in for Dawn Stensland on the Dawn Stensland Show. The call-in number is 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. And let me just get into some breaking news. It is so much. Did y'all just hear that the Trump administration is suing the city of Los Angeles, Mayor Karen Bass, and Los Angeles City Council? It claims that LA Sanctuary City Ordinance unlawfully obstructed ICE, violating the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution by preventing the cooperation with ICE and refusing to share information and resources. The government is claiming here that the sanctuary policies fostered created the conditions for violent anti-ICE protests involving, y'all saw it, the rioting, the burning, the looting, the property damage. I mean, just think, if you're driving at 50 miles per hour and someone is standing over a bridge and they chunk down big blocks of cement into your window. I mean, scary times, so much so that Donald Trump did the right thing by deploying the National Guard and Marines to quell that unrest. Well, the DOJ wants a federal court to now declare that LA sanctuary laws are invalid. That would be huge for every state, including Pennsylvania and Philadelphia, where we have Philadelphia as a sanctuary city. So dumb. But it will block future enforcement. Future enforcement and prevent city officials from enacting similar restrictions. Now, of course, you know, Mayor Bass, I mean, she's so ridiculous. Her office has not yet issued a formal public statement. No one has really said anything. Legal experts argue the lawsuit is weak. No, it's not. Where it stands now, the case is filed in U.S. District Court for California, which is very liberal. Y'all know that. But it will. So this will probably end up going to the Supreme Court. Also, Donald Trump is right now touring Florida's alligator Alcatraz. Had you heard about that, Albie? I know. It's a little island surrounded by swamp waters, filled with alligators, and they're going to put some of, according from what we've read, some of the harshest of their illegals on this island and double dog dare anybody to step foot in that water. That is going to be crazy. But Trump, DeSantis, Noem are already there on the ground in Florida, and they're getting ready to.
Just a little bit of audio, Kathy.
Sorry
for the brashness of the sound of the helicopter in the background, but prior to taking off to head down to Florida, mm-hmm. Trump did address a gaggle of reporters and had this to say about alligator Alcatraz.
Snakes are fast, but alligators are big. We're going to teach them how to run away from an alligator, okay? If they escape prison, how to run away. Don't run in a straight line. Run like this. And you know what? Your chances go up about 1%. Okay?
He's so irreverent. He just doesn't care.
No.
He has no couth. As my grandmother would have
just
said.
Just don't run in a straight line, says the president.
Let me tell you something. That is so true. Y'all know I grew up in the Deep South. And by Deep South, I mean the woods of Alabama. And that is a common lesson that you're taught. If you're being chased by a snake, and I've seen snakes chase people. I saw a snake once chase my Auntie Sherry. She was in the outhouse. She comes out of the outhouse, looks up, there's a snake. It drops. My auntie starts running, and we're standing on the back porch screaming, "Run, Sherry, run!" I know. I got some stories.
Did she get away?
She did get away.
Good.
But she was running in a zigzag. Everyone knows you don't run in a straight line because a snake can jump. So anyway. So Donald Trump, oh my God, he's like, snakes are fast, but alligators are faster.
Do you want a rundown as to what to expect from alligator Alcatraz? I do have that footage as well.
Oh, yeah,
that's
please.
From the Florida Attorney General, and you can go to our YouTube feed, youtube.com/@12NWPHD, to both see Kathy and this video. Take a watch.
Attorney General James Uthmeyer here at the Miami-Dade Collier Training Facility. This is an old, virtually abandoned airport facility right in the middle of the Everglades. Florida's been leading on immigration enforcement, supporting the Trump administration and ICE's efforts to detain and deport criminal aliens. The governor tasked state leaders to identify places for new temporary detention facilities. I think this is the best one. As I call it, Alligator Alcatraz. This 30-square-mile area is completely surrounded by the Everglades. Presents a efficient, low-cost opportunity to build a temporary detention facility because you don't need to invest that much in the perimeter. People get out, there's not much waiting for them other than alligators and pythons. Nowhere to go, nowhere to hide.
Wow.
Within just 30 to 60 days after we begin construction, it could be up and running and could house as many as 1,000 criminal aliens. This presents a great opportunity for the state of Florida to work with Miami-Dade and Collier counties. Alligator Alcatraz, we're ready to go.
They're ready to go. I love it. Call in 855-839-1210. Another piece of news that came out is that sanctuary cities may lose federal tuition funding. I voted for this. I voted for all of this. I'm so excited. I'm so excited. Now, what is interesting, let me pivot to something very serious, and that is, let's see if I can get back to it. The AI. Had you guys heard about they were trying to put a moratorium, a ban on AI development here in America, a 10-year moratorium. And apparently that was voted out. So 99 of the 100 senators voted to strip that moratorium out of the bill. And the AI systems that they're trying to protect is facial recognition. As a freedom-loving patriot, I'm not for that. But autonomous decision-making, predictive analytics, and defense, healthcare, and policing. The thought is AI is here, and I do agree with that. AI is here. AI is not going anywhere. And if anyone should be in the business, My initial thought is, and please call me if you disagree, call me at 855-839-1210. But my initial thought is that if the world is developing AI, you know, China is, you know, Russia is, you know, India is, we are no longer a unipolar world. We are now, there's about four major countries, America being the largest, followed by China, Russia. America, China, Russia, and now India. That's the fourth. And if these major nations are developing AI and we are handcuffing ourselves by not allowing the federal government to participate in the development, in the regulating of AI, then we will not be competitive. AI is changing the world. It has changed my world. And so, I mean, this is where we are. We really need to hold our legislators' feet to the fire. I am not for facial recognition. I'm thinking China. I'm thinking social credits. I'm thinking the government has too much of our information already. But nonetheless, here we are. We're getting ready to come back. We should have on the phone pretty soon Donald Trump's poster. He was Trump's poster from before the escalator, the golden escalator ride down. We'll be right back.
Don Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.